And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Tonight is the second of a series of programs from the Netherlands, recorded at the Ulm 2013 Hacker Camp. This program aired on Ulm Rope 104.7 FM, a radio station formed especially for the event. Attendees could also hear the audio of the station by dialing 104.7 on their deck phones. What we're going to hear tonight is an early morning radio show that was actually broadcast in the afternoon, covering a range of topics from the Bradley Manning verdict to healthcare in the United States. This was broadcast on July 31st, 2013.
Shine, because this is the early morning radio show, bringing you the latest news, cool interviews, stubborn opinions, some good music, all on 104.7 FM.
Yeah, and good morning indeed to the people at Ulm 104.7 FM. My name is Brenno de Winter, and you might wonder, why wasn't the news read at 4 o'clock? We were out of people. We need more people that read the news, help out, get people into the studio and do shit. I'm joined here by loads of people. First of all, Bernie.
Yes. Welcome. Bernie. It's still morning for us Americans.
Exactly. That's why it's the early morning.
We Americans. See, yeah, we can't even speak English. It's bad.
Me neither, but... The thing was at HAR-FM, we had the early morning radio show from 7 a.m. till 10 a.m. And then the second day it became 8 a.m. till 11 a.m. So I thought, like, why not start at 4 and, you know, get over the entire issue. Hey, but yesterday, Bradley Manning.
The verdict came in.
Yeah. He was acquitted of aiding the state. The enemy.
Aiding the enemy. I think he aided the state, actually. Well, yeah. He aided everyone, in my opinion.
Yeah, but he was found guilty on 20 other charges. How do you feel about that?
Well, I don't think any of us were surprised. I don't think the evidence... I think there was no evidence at all that he intentionally leaked information to aid Al-Qaeda and its affiliates. I think that's a ludicrous claim by the government. So it's good that he was not found guilty of that, but I fear that all the other counts will be used to keep him imprisoned for most of the rest of his life, if not his entire life. And I think there's a lot of political pressure on this military judge, who, by the way, was chosen by the commanding officer of Bradley Manning, where Bradley Manning was on duty.
Really? I didn't know that.
That's a standard. That's not an unusual thing. That's a standard military procedure, that the judge is chosen by the commanding officer of the...
So if Carl misbehaves, then you make Emmanuel choose somebody to rule over Kyle.
Funny how that works.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely an option, Emmanuel. Welcome to the studio again.
I can do that in the military, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
Wow. They just make up their own rules, don't they?
In the U.S., you have the criminal courts, which is under the Department of Justice, and you have the Universal Code of Military Justice, the UCMJ, which is a different set of legal rules, somewhat similar, but different in a lot of ways, which is run by the Pentagon. And then you have civil courts. There's a whole different rules of civil procedure. So there's really three different kind of court systems in the U.S., that's under the federal.
Yeah, but that's not too odd. In the Netherlands, we have a criminal court, we have got a civil court, and then we've got administrative court. I'm in administrative court a lot to fight for my FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act request. Fortunately, I've never been to a criminal court, and also once in civil court. But it's a funny system. But then you have got this military court, and that makes it very interesting. So, yeah.
Well, Kyle and I went to the trial about a month or so ago in Fort Meade, Maryland, and it blew us away, didn't it?
Why did it blow you away?
Yeah, it's on a military base. In fact, this is the same base that the National Security Agency is a resident of. It's basically on the other half of Fort Meade. Half of it is dedicated to the NSA and all the things they do, and then the other half is a working American military base. So you have to go through a checkpoint to go into the facility, and then find your way around on your own, because you're basically allowed to just drive around as a guest once you check into the base, and you must sort of coordinate your own directions, find the military courtroom. And then the courtroom itself was very, very formal, lots of security, gates. They were set up with a lot of overflow for media and anybody who wanted to come and witness it. But of course, because it's on a base, because of the context of the trial and just basically lack of interest, I think, there wasn't a lot of people, so they had all these gates and security for really no one. I mean, there was maybe a dozen, maybe 20 people total in the courtroom, which is unfortunate. But anyway, it was pretty interesting, just the procedure to get into the waiting room and then to be called into this military courtroom. It was a very strange thing. It's not as public as a normal court.
Everybody wearing military fatigues, not allowed to bring a cell phone anywhere near the place. You have to leave your cell phone in your car. It's like going to North Korea. You know, there's certain things you just cannot do, and you have to listen to everything you're told. It was civil. We went there. We were polite. They were polite. But it was very scary just being in a courtroom like that.
Emmanuel, did you notice that the security army, I guess they're military police officers that escort Bradley Manning around or manhandle him around, they're not wearing uniforms. What's with that polo shirts and the plain clothes?
Yeah, that is interesting. In fact, we saw a couple of those guys look like linebackers for a football team just standing there in front. And what they were doing at first, when we first got into the courtroom, they were blocking our view of Bradley Manning. He was right there. And these two huge guys were standing for some reason, keeping us from seeing him. Once the trial began, they moved and you could see him. And occasionally they would just stand in the front of the room and look intimidating. So I imagine not having a uniform makes them look more intimidating.
Yeah, and they're basically watching the witnesses in the audience and preventing us from going up to approaching Bradley at all. And also, you're not allowed to say anything in the courtroom. And in fact, any kind of shirt or anything that says something controversial or any logos in favor of like Free Bradley, anything like that was not allowed at all. And if you even made any kind of whispers to a neighbor that was audible, you could be ejected from the courtroom as well, which is not like a normal public building.
A number of people, though, who were attending the trial and had attended it before did wear a shirt that had one word on it, truth. And they were allowed to wear that shirt. For now.
It's not controversial?
Well, it has been, hasn't it?
Yeah.
This is all about the truth, isn't it?
You would say that they kind of have a ministry of truth in the US, you know? It's it took down change.gov, so they're rewriting history as we speak. So, yeah, perhaps.
Go to truth.gov.
Yeah.
What's next?
One question.
Yes.
Why do you wear a National Security Agency shirt? Did you work for them?
No, I was there. Geez, in the late '90s, I was given a tour. I was with a group. There's a group in Philadelphia where I'm from called the World Affairs Council, and somehow someone involved with the World Affairs Council got an invitation by the curator of the NSA Cryptography Museum. So we got a private tour from the curator of that museum, and they went into some depth. The curator went into some discussions, and we had a private briefing with some NSA people, and it was really very interesting. And I got this shirt while I was there, and I thought it would be apropos to wear it to the Ohm conference.
This is the secret studio guest who forgot to turn his cell phone off, but I forgot to tell him. So that's it's a number in London. I could see really quickly. But having said that, you're listening to the Omroep 104.7 FM. This is the early morning radio show. What you can do and shouldn't do at Om today.
Run around. The more that I see you, the more you just put me down.
Yes, we're pessimistic where we can and optimistic where we must. Welcome back to Omroep. Next to me is Ronald Kingma.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning indeed. Yeah, it's a little bit of practice, but eventually you'll get there. You own a business in security. You test applications, and we've met in a very special way because I had 1 month of showing data leaks to the world, and at a certain point, my website got hacked, and it turned out that Ronald Kingma was behind it. And I made a crucial mistake. What mistake did I make?
The crucial mistake was in the open source software you were using. It was old, no longer supported. There was no one working on it anymore.
Beginner's mistake.
Yeah. And you use the same database for everything.
Yeah, that kind of changed after that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, thank God I don't maintain personal information, but basically that was the point I was making all the time, that people store personal information and don't bother to think about the consequences. Yeah. Hey, recently you had a small company. At a certain point, your company was acquired.
Yeah.
What are you doing now?
Basically the same. Only we were trying to make it even better, more professional, helping more and more companies, people with security issues they have.
Yeah, I wanted you to the studio because one of the areas where you are very active in is healthcare.
Yeah.
And my opinion is that in a lot of hospitals, data is poorly protected. And basically, Dutch government is making a total mess of everything related to security and medical data. Am I now too pessimistic or kind of realistic?
No, I think you have a point there. I'm not in the opportunity to say everything. But what I can say is that most of the hospitals, most of the care cure companies, on the outside, on the internet side, they are aware of the risks they have. They are protecting it. They are doing penetration testing, etc., to get everything sorted out. But what we see overall is the internal network of most of the hospitals. It's open because a hospital is an open institution. You can walk in. No one asks you what you are going to do, whatever. And some of them, you just plug in your laptop to the one of the wall outlets you have, and you can do a lot
of damage,
of getting sensitive information, changing information, etc.
Yeah, we've had a couple of cases in the Netherlands. One was a hospital where 500,000 records were available. For those listening and not understanding or appreciating the full danger of this, what is the real issue here? Why should we care at all?
Your hospital record is very sensitive. It's personal. You don't want to share it with the world.
Yeah, but you know, I had one hospital saying to me, well, you know, it's not like all the medical data. It's just the name and the department where you are treated. Is that
No, there's more in it. Overall, it's just your name, your BSN number, your
BSN is Burger Service Number, is Social Security number.
Yeah, the Social Security number for the English
listeners.
And with that information, you can also do a lot, but there is also information what you're treated for. If you broke your ankle, if you have some kind of sexual disease got somewhere. You don't want that to get out in the open.
No.
Especially the insurance companies. Within the Netherlands, I doubt it. I think in the rest of the world, there are a lot of insurance companies who are glad to get in information.
Yeah. Sorry about the surrounding noise, but all of a sudden the wind is starting. There are huge gusts. And we would have announced it in the news if it were not that we were short on volunteers.
Yeah.
But you say the Dutch security companies, they're not all that bad. I tend to disagree, and not to be stubborn.
Dutch security companies, you mean?
No, that Dutch, insurance companies.
Yeah.
I think they are after a lot of the information, actually, and are trying to gain more control. So I do think they are interested in medical files, actually.
Yeah, but basically, for the basic insurance, they cannot say no. But for all other, if you want additional insurance, etc., they can say no without giving you the reason why they do not accept you.
Yeah, true. Kyle,
you have a private Kyle there, but you have private healthcare or state healthcare in the Netherlands?
We went from state healthcare to private healthcare recently, like over a couple of years ago, and it has basically gone down the drain a little bit. So,
sorry to hear that. Was that by popular demand, or what brought that on?
Just politics. We used to have both combined. People with a lower income, they have healthcare from the government, and people with more who earn more money at private healthcare. And there was also a difference. People with private healthcare could have better beds in the hospital, all that kind of stuff. And now they just make it one healthcare system for everyone. It's for everyone is the same. You have a basic insurance, and on top of that, you can choose extra.
Yeah, and the story was you would get more companies that would be doing it. It would be all better. It would be more efficient. Well, what we've seen that one company buys out another company, so you get these conglomerates. I believe you've got now three or four huge insurance companies and one or two small ones. One of the small ones is actually just as bad as the big ones, and the other one, OwnVZ, is a lot better, really a lot better, but you pay for it. You pay for it dearly, so that you pay a lot more premium. I believe I pay up to €200 per month.
And are you required to? Because we're going through this whole thing in the United States right now where people are very soon going to be required legally to purchase healthcare insurance. Up until now, they haven't been able to. But you have to purchase it?
Yeah, you have to.
And what if you don't buy it? What happens?
I think a hospital or a doctor is for his code of ethics should take care of you, but what has to, yeah.
But what happens to the person who had just decided to break the law and not buy insurance?
I don't think there is that much that happens actually, but as soon as something happens, you basically fall out of a lot of systems. So, you know, for the emergency medical stuff, you'll be okay. But for the rest, you won't.
I'm not talking about will you get health care. In the U.S., you get health care.
No, you don't. You won't go to
prison. Are you penalized somehow? Are you fined for not having... what's the incentive for people just not paying? For paying, you know?
Well, there are actually hundreds of thousands of people who are not paying.
Right.
And in general, studies learn that they are on the lower side of... society. So what you see is that they can tend to get ill a lot more. So you go from one problem to the next problem to the next problem. So that's a big deal. But there is no penal. There's no penal. You won't go to prison, or they won't shoot you, or whatever.
They're just in the U.S. They're planning just to charge it. The Internal Revenue Service, the taxing authority, the federal taxing authority, will fine you. At some point, that's in the plans. It hasn't gone into effect yet.
I think that's also the same here, because the Dutch tax can see if you are paying yes or no.
No, that's when you're self-employed.
No, also if you're not self-employed, the insurance companies need to hand over a list of everyone who is insured.
Yep, that's true.
And there is some kind of control. And the last thing I understood was the Dutch taxes are getting the people who do not pay and make them pay one way
or
another.
You know what? I'll just ask DuckDuckGo.
The one thing that seems to be clear is that there's confusion in different countries about their own healthcare. Confusion seems to be universal in both the Netherlands and the U.S. about our healthcare insurance systems.
Well, in general, the system is not that bad, but the movements the companies are making is very dangerous.
Is there consolidation and lack of choice and...
Well, what I'm afraid of, I'm working on a story where at a certain point you will see that insurance companies ask for information they are not allowed to ask, and they do it anyhow. And the people who are asking for that medical information are not adequately, they're not allowed to do so. But they make the people that are insured voluntarily giving it up.
One thing I'd like to add to what Bernie said in the discussion in general, I've paid private insurance for quite a while, and Right around the time the insurance laws passed, I think it was about a year ago, the company reduced significantly the payment cost for me and also included dental, which I did not have, couldn't care for my teeth. And then recently, I think when the legislation came into effect, or it comes into effect this November, I believe, they sent me some communications about how, once again, I'll have to adjust my plan. And I had gotten around that, I think, by like having a higher deductible. So if I become really, like, really injured, then they'll cover me. But I have to cover everything up to a certain amount of money. But they're challenging that. So in fact, people with high deductibles won't be able to have a lower rate because their deductible is like $10,000 or $20,000, whatever that is equivalent to here. And so, but there are other things where if you have a chronic illness or a condition that's already, like say you have diabetes and it's a known condition and you're switching from government or you're beginning to have private healthcare, and also under this new system, it's called pre-existing, you cannot be denied. So there's some contention and back and forth, depending on the issues, because on the one hand, this system will be very, very good. But as Bernie indicated, if you do not find your own insurance or accept what the government has sort of organized, you're kind of SOL and you will be penalized and thus have penalties in the IRS. One other thing, anecdotally, I don't really have a lot of evidence of this, but I've been seeing it more and more and more and more. There's a huge, huge push for electronic storage of medical data. Yeah. It is like the hottest new thing. Everybody's talking about it. I've met people just talking in a restaurant. Yeah, I work for this company. I went to this convention. We make medical software and we do this and we do that. And it just seems little places, there's these little stories of people really selling this technology.
Yeah, but it's getting more and more. Also, portals for patients, you can log on, see your own data, see what's happening, your x-rays, blood examples, or whatever.
I'm not denying. There's actually some things I would like for them to fix. Like, in particular, the company that I'm with, you cannot pay your bill online. That's kind of crazy. But so they're kind of like, and they say, oh yeah, we don't do email.
Yeah.
And there are some convenient things if you can like coordinate your billing or your prescriptions or that kind of thing. But also, I'm not seeing as much of a push for security. It's just all about how great digitizing this stuff is. Yeah. So it's going to be a bit of a rodeo.
Yeah, but there is legislation within the Netherlands for the healthcare. There are also some NEN norms. I don't know. NEN norms are also the NEN.
It's similar to ISO.
No, it's not ISO. ISO can be audited.
But similar.
Yes.
They're standard. Standard.
Yeah, and they have standards for communicating.
NEN means Nederlands Normalisatie Instituut.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's probably what they want in the US.
No, but they have standards for
interoperating.
If I want to exchange information, patient information, etc., with you, then
so my normal practitioner then can speak to my specialist because they're talking about my dandruff or whatever.
Not just put the plain text thing in the email, but encrypt it.
Cool.
Things.
I'm not hearing much about that in the States, but I sure hope it
I guess, but it's not totally the same. But HIPAA kind of sort of arranges that in the US.
Understood.
Yep. That's why when Kyle said that his health insurance company won't email him information, it's because of this HIPAA law. I forget what the health insurance
is. That it, Bernie?
Privacy something act.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
For because a nation email, that as we all know, is not private.
For a nation that doesn't know privacy, the Fourth Amendment is not adequate protection for privacy. HIPAA is a very big step forward.
Yeah.
By the way, I sorted it out. I was wrong. You can be fined. What the Ministry of Healthcare does, they determine every year what the average premium will be, and you can get a surcharge of 30%. So.
So you have to pay 30% more. Yes, would you be retroactively charged for the insurance you did not buy before?
Yep.
Okay. So you have to pay everything you didn't pay in the past plus 30%.
Yeah, but I don't know about many stories where this happened, and I get all the court cases before they go to court in administrative law. I get them every week, And I've never ever seen a case about that. I did see that some healthcare insurers were sued under the FOIA, but furthermore than that, nope.
So it's not really being enforced.
I don't think so. And you know, it wouldn't help, because then what will you get? Somebody who doesn't have money will now have more debt. You know, what's the point, you know? Shoot him? So yeah, I don't know what to do about it.
Well, if they get, the one ironic thing is, if they were to lock them up in the United States, if they'd be locked up for not paying their health insurance, then they would get free healthcare coverage while they're in prison.
In the Netherlands, no, the funny thing is in the Netherlands you wouldn't.
Oh really? You have to pay for your health care while you're in prison?
Yeah, and then you would still go to the doctor just as anybody else would. So, but of course, within the prison.
Yes. But how do you pay the prison doctor when you're locked up in the cage? You're forced to break big rocks into smaller rocks is to pay the doctor? Is that how it works?
I don't think that politicians are that practical to think about at all. So I don't think that will work at all.
Yeah, maybe your family has to coordinate it or something.
No. Even? That's not what we would do in the Netherlands.
Really?
No. Family basically would say raise the middle finger on the... Not in all cases, of course, but...
Right.
It's your own fault, told you so.
Yeah, yeah, that would be typically... So, yeah. But that's interesting. In the Netherlands, the military, they don't have to insure because the Department of Defense... Sorry, the Department of Peace... They would pay.
It's really called the Department of Peace?
No, of course not. Of course not. No. No, we.
So I couldn't believe
that. We have stupid politicians. No, we do actually have a Department of Security and Justice.
Yeah.
So that's yeah. Cecile here.
Safety and justice.
Security and justice, according to the department itself.
That's how they translate it?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah. I know, I double-checked for my speech tomorrow, so yeah.
Omroep 104.7 FM. 104.7 on your deck.
And we're back, and actually 2600 is here, but basically they're not here for the show, although they have filled half the hour already. Kyle, you have a Off the Hook special edition.
Yeah, we're going to have a show a little bit later this evening.
What time?
I believe it's 8 p.m. local time.
Yep.
That's 20 hours, 2100.
I heard it's for 2 hours.
That's what I heard too, and that's also the email I sent to the speaker desk to update the schedule.
Wow.
And we're really excited. We'd like to get a lot of people on the show. We're going to have some interesting discussions, obviously talking about the Bradley Manning incident and information about that. We'll have a discussion, the Snowden case, Prism in general, and the event, and anything anyone else wants to bring up, and even some of the things we've been talking about, like medical stuff, and so all kinds of things going on. So this is, it's exciting to get people together and discuss it.
Sounds like fun.
Should be.
Who will be hosting the show? Of course, Emmanuel, Kyle.
Bernie S. I think Mike will be around, and Junes, and Red Hacked, and maybe some other people. Maybe Mitch Altman will find him. And
hey, one final question. I see that you're walking around with a camera. What's going on?
Oh, wow. That's funny. Yeah, we're basically... We're filming all of these things that are going on. I think Emmanuel and I have been doing traveling, a lot of radio, and over the last couple of years going to events and all of these incidents happening in the news, we've basically decided that if we don't capture our story and capture the things that are going on around us, it's only going to be told in one or the other way. And they're often other people's versions, and we've got interesting perspectives on it, and we meet very, very interesting people, and they all have stories, and yeah, so we're basically capturing a couple different things, but there's no sort of one specific thing at this point that we're only shooting for. We're basically capturing as much as we can, and also for the event, we're going to be sharing some of our footage that we capture here, so...
Okay, cool. Would love to see that, and maybe even use some in the late night television show. I have a show at 11 p.m. And I'll talk about that with Cecile in a second. That would be very nice for an instart later on. So we should definitely talk about it. But you've got a show to prepare, so
yeah. And if anyone would like to speak with us on camera, we're more than willing to chat with you for a minute. So please come up to us if you see me walking around with a camera, or any kind of informal discussion you'd like to have to be on the record with us.
Or if you'd like the brand new Hacker Calendar for 2014, it just came out here at Ulm.
Show me.
It's got payphones on the cover and throughout every single month. Payphones all around the world, our most popular feature.
Can I have one?
Yes, absolutely. Let me throw one at you.
Oh,
there you go. Oh. We also have for you the 2013 calendar, which has a picture of the NSA for the month of August, which starts tomorrow. And that's a picture that Kyle took, actually. We drove down another time to Fort Meade and took a picture and was stopped by four different police cars on the NSA campus.
It's also very good photography, Kyle.
Thank you. Yeah, Manuel's really good with audio, and I've done a lot with still photography. So with video, we're really going to work on motion and take our talents and mix them up and see what we can do. That was an interesting discussion, though, we had with NSA police. They basically saw us throw away some coffee cups in their garbage can in the parking lot.
And that was very suspicious.
That was very suspicious.
So they talked to us. Four different police cars stopped us at the same time and kept
us
from...
Did you capture that on camera?
No, we didn't. We weren't able to do that. Or audio, but our memory's gone.
We were actually really, really proud that they didn't know we had a camera while we were down there. So, had we maybe photographed them and been more open about that, we probably would have had a much different discussion.
So if you see
explain,
us...
No, wait, explain it. What is a much different discussion?
Oh, yeah, right. So Fort Meade is a military base, and basically the NSA police patrol the perimeter of the facility, and on especially the NSA side near the parking lots and the sort of interface between public and government property, they patrol those roads. So even if you go to a gas station just around the edge of their entrance and are doing something, say, recording or photographing, you're going to be interrogated. You're going to be probably reported. They probably wrote an incident report about us being there that particular time. So it was in our interest.
So executing freedom of speech?
Yeah, yeah.
We need to send them a calendar. We didn't do that yet. But when they see the calendar with our names on it after they stopped us for being on their campus, I think they'll smile to themselves.
Say, Kyle, do you recall if those police, were they badged or...
Their car said National
NSA?
Security Agency.
Yeah,
police.
It was all NSA
really
police.
NSA police.
Police,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because there's the Federal Protective Service, which are the federal police that guard all federal buildings in the United States. But perhaps because NSA is special and because they're part of a army base, there's a lot of overlapping jurisdictions, but I guess the NSA has a budget of 10 times the CIA.
Yeah.
So they can afford
their
own.
How do you
police.
Know that? Because the budget
is
secret.
Public, this is public information. It's a black budget from a standpoint of what it's spent on, and there are probably some other things.
But the total
he's
number.
Also wearing, he's also wearing a shirt that says NSA on it, so I don't know how.
I must know what I'm talking about.
I recently heard an interview with Philippa Gee, and from 1992, that actually Cecile made, and there he said that the budget back then was secret.
Yes, but it's.
It's how
the programs are secret now, but go ahead, Kyle.
The allocation of the money, I think, is secret. It's not the total. The total, we know how much they get.
So they changed.
Yeah. Well,
in fact, this past week in the U.S., there was a really interesting fight in our Congress over budget money going to the NSA for continuing a particular surveillance program that was basically recording all Americans' telephone activity and without... really with a general warrant, which is illegal under our Constitution, according to most people that understand the Constitution. And it was a very close vote to cut off spending for this particular NSA program. But the president and some of his supporters did a lot of lobbying and didn't get the program shut down.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you could listen for a second to Philippa Gee in 1992. And here, how he explained...
Robert Gates gave an interview to Time magazine in April. And he said that the CIA budget had been reduced for the coming fiscal year. You know what the fiscal year is in the United States. It's from the 1st of October to the 30th of September. And for the fiscal year 1993, which begins the 1st of October 1992, Gates said the reduction in the CIA's budget was 2.5%. This compares with something like 3% for the overall Pentagon budget. But the CIA's budget is hidden inside the, or the whole intelligence community budget is hidden inside the entire appropriation for the Department of Defense. And the general, it's a secret budget. What the CIA receives, what the National Security Agency receives, what the DIA receives, all the intelligence community, it's a classified figure. But the most common figure that one sees in the press from the journalists in Washington who are covering this area is around $30
billion. $30 billion back then, but that was an estimated guess and not a... Not a exact number back then, but nowadays that's open apparently.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. That might have been two layers of that. So the Department of Defense gets a certain budget, national security or their budget for the fiscal year, and then that's allocated to the different departments, CIA, NSA, you know, whomever, and then within them. So that's not known which agency receives the most, and then what the agencies actually spend each of their allocated allotment, yeah, that we don't know that either. So but it was really interesting, and what you were saying about that picture in particular is that we photograph from public roads, and I think getting back to the journalistic attribute of this photo, it's amazing that you're under suspicion for photographing something that essentially as a citizen we pay for. And at the time, we didn't know really about what was going on with like Prism or like Edward Snowden or anything like that. Our interest was really from like a historical perspective, programs like Echelon and things. Mm-hmm. We were aware. I think the previous month in the calendar also shows Men with Hill in England, which is a listening post. And we knew that the agreement was that is operated by the Royal Air Force, and then the Department of Defense has contractors that work inside that facility in England, but a lot of that traffic is then sent back to the NSA. So we photographed the Men with Hill installation, and then also wanted to visit Maryland to see the NSA facility where invariably they process a lot of that. And at the time, we didn't really know about this other facility, the Utah Data Center, which is
by the way,
another
in
processing
the picture,
facility.
I found the sheep to be very suspicious.
By the way, if you see us wandering around, we have these calendars, we have a few left, and maybe Kyle will even sign some of them, because they really are amazing pictures of surveillance outposts throughout the world.
Yes, they are. Back to Philip Agee. For those of you that don't know who Philip Agee was, because he passed away in 2008. In Cuba, yes. Yeah, for you, that's special. For the Dutch, that's just one flight away.
We Americans are not allowed to go to Cuba unless you have a special exception.
No, but you've got basic freedoms. That's why you're not allowed to go there.
Right.
I went to Cuba.
Yes, but he could go as a journalist. But
wait, again, Emmanuel. You went to
Cuba, and I went to North Korea too. What? Why not?
No, hey, for me, it's totally okay if you go there and, you know, explore, investigate the world. That's your goddamn task as a journalist.
Mm-hmm. That's a big deal for most Americans. You're like, why? You know, cause most Americans are trained to believe that these are very dangerous countries, terrorist organizations.
In 1989, I went with my high school to Eastern Germany, and then we wanted to see the wall. And we were on the east side, so the tour leader that we were obliged to have on board of the bus refused to go there. So we kept shouting, "We want to see the wall, we want to see the wall." And then ultimately we went by the wall, and the lady said, and I'll never forget that, Jetzt fahren wir die antifaschistische Schutzwall entlang, which means now we're driving against the wall that protects us from fascism. Which is kind of interesting if I live on the other side, having lost 29 family members because of the Second World War. So,
war is peace.
Definitely, yeah. War is peace. So that was interesting. And now basically this is the same line of arguing that apparently some Americans use.
Oh, absolutely. For building our walls.
Yeah. Voluntarily.
Yeah, because we have to protect ourselves from those foreigners that want to get to us.
Hey, back to Philippe Agui. He said a couple of things extra, and there's a very interesting part, and I'm not saying what just yet. I wonder what you think about it. And this was for me a reason to write an article at a news site last week.
$30,000 million. For the overall intelligence community budget. What the CIA's budget of that is, no one has really said. It could be $5 billion, it could be $10 billion, or it could be 12. It's very hard to calculate. But as far as reordering priorities in the CIA, this too is a matter of public record. From Gates's confirmation hearings before the Senate in September and October of last year, and from other official sources in the months since the end of the Gulf War. One is the renewal of priority in what they call human intelligence. That means having people, spies, in place where they need them. And the lack of human intelligence from Iraq was apparently notable during the war and before the war was initiated. This was considered to be a failure on the part of the CIA and the intelligence community generally. You know what I mean when I talk about people. These are spies within political parties or governments or military services, as opposed to technical collection, which is the monitoring by satellites or by radio intercepts and so forth. So the human intelligence side is to be re-emphasized with a higher and new priority. The other area is economic intelligence reporting. And I have read one or two reports, I believe, sourced to people inside the intelligence oversight committees of Congress, which relate to the effect that I believe I saw the figure 40% of new money will be spent on collecting economic intelligence. And this is not meant to include or mean commercial intelligence, which would be given to United States firms so that they could more effectively compete with foreign firms or multinational corporations. But it means intelligence on practices by foreign governments which put United States companies at a disadvantage, such as dumping, for example, such as the theft of copyrights or of intellectual property, those kinds of things. And also the overall macroeconomic picture for the various regions and countries of the world. So economic intelligence reporting, particularly, of course, on Japan, and on Western Europe, plus the availability of resources such as water and minerals and so forth in third world countries, those two would be high priority.
We are getting to the top of the hour, but he makes a very interesting statement here, and I wonder what you think about Kyle, to start with.
Yeah, I'm surprised he wasn't talking a little bit more about like gas, cyber, and all these things. But absolutely,
20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. It's industrial espionage and corporate stuff. I think it's these things are integrated. So it's
It
just struck me as time goes on. It's amazing how much things stay the same. He was talking decades ago in the early 90s about our intelligence agencies spying on foreign governments' economic activity, and we know just recently it came out through Ed Snowden's leaked documents from the NSA that GCHQ, the British intelligence agency, had been monitoring an EU trade negotiations, and had even set up a fake a cyber cafe for the trade delegates, and was monitoring into their keystrokes, and it was just really this stuff keeps been going on for decades. It's not going to stop. I don't think it's going to stop. That's my opinion, no matter what we say, frankly.
Yeah, like they have like better toys and they have to do less because it's all organized.
Yeah, it is, you know, so it is kind of strange that you see this, but I thought it was very remarkable because, as Cecile will explain later, she wasn't there to talk about copyrights in yes.
Really funny was, of course, the story of Edgy, how he how he left the CIA, how he was being followed, how he was being discredited, how the UK didn't give him a place to stay and even put him into jail, how the Netherlands was reacting, and everybody was walking on the hand of Big Brother, United States, of course, in this. And that's nice stories to hear from an ex-CIA man who talks, who left the CIA because of the coup in Chile. As a basic sort of reason for what happened with his mind when he was in DC in the CIA, and then this guy starts to talk about copyrights and, you know, copyright theft, and in 92 we were not so much busy with that. I mean, we were talking about computers, and there were, like, in my group of Ultimatum, a group of investigative journalists, there we were still quarreling about, will we take computers? No, I'm not going to take computers. It's Big Brother. So people still don't have computers who were sort of part of that group. But most of us have.
Yeah. We'll talk about it after the top of the hour. But there is news. So we want to talk about the news first. And at top of the hour, I have news. It's 5 o'clock in the Netherlands. My name is Brenno de Winter and this is the Omroep News. Om 2013 has been opened. Organizer Koen Martens did that by disabling his Twitter account and promising to delete his Facebook account. He's had enough of the peer pressure and he hopes other people will follow his steps. I'll respond to that later. The NSA is able to read the content of emails and Facebook messages. Earlier this was denied, but according to new documents released by whistleblower Edward Snowden through the UK newspaper The Guardian, this is possible. Furthermore, the weather is still sunny today with a little bit of clouds expected during the later this evening. And temperatures will remain approximately around 23 degrees. The current terror alert in the Netherlands is still substantial.
Omroep 104.7 FM. 104.7 on your deck.
You've been listening to a special edition of Off the Wall, recorded at the Ulm 2013 Hacker Camp on July 31st, 2013. Next time, we'll continue our Dutch radio broadcast with the first part of a two-hour edition of Off the Hook that was broadcast to the camp attendees. Until then, this is Emmanuel for Off the Wall. Have a good night.